The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players, uncover their stories, and discover what makes them tick. If you love guitar, music, and the backstory of people's lives, stick around. You're in the right place. This is an important announcement for anyone who wants to advertise here on Everyone Loves Guitar. Over the last 9 months alone, we've had 425,000 more downloads, added over 25,000 monthly listens, and grown our YouTube subscriber base by 72 times. During this time, we've kept our advertising rates consistent, but we will be increasing rates on January 1st. So if you're a business looking to generate new leads or increase your cash flow by picking up new clients or customers, or if you're a label looking to promote new music, then listen up. For information on advertising on Everyone Loves Guitar, fill in the short form at everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. Again, that's everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. Even if you want to advertise next year, you'll get to lock into marketing your product or service at the current rates before rates go up at the end of this year. You know, much of your success as an online business, especially with guitars, will depend on your domain name. The owner of two great guitar domain names has contacted me and he has them for sale. Those two domain names are guitarbuyers.com and cashforguitars.com. Call or email them at the contact information listed on that page and they will give you 20% off the purchase price. In addition, they'll work with you to make payments if that's what you need. Again, that's guitarbuyers.com and cashforguitars.com. Hey guys, I got something really cool going on. This is a fantastic opportunity for actually you and I to meet and for you to hear some incredibly cool music. On Tuesday, October 1st, the Nashville guitar community is putting on a tremendous show of some of the top players. Pat Bergeson is going to be there. I had him on the show. He was mentored by Chet. Andy Wood, who's like lightning dangerous, also another guy that was on the show, plays mandolin, guitar, acoustic. He's a wizard. Darren Favorite, who is also on this show, second or third generation Nashville player. Matthew Lee, he actually runs a Nashville guitar community, along with Paul Johnson and John Stazella. And he is such a tremendous player. Meg Williams, up-and-coming blues star. And Terrence Downing, solid player, rocking in Nashville as well. So it's only $15 to get into this event. Again, it's Tuesday night, October 1st. The doors open at 6 p.m. The show starts at 7. It's going to be at the Analog Room at the Hutton Hotel in Nashville. And I think that's on West End Avenue. Tons of gear giveaways from Wampler, Eminence Speakers, GuitarEFX.com, BTPA Cables, Lucky Dog Guitars, Groon Guitar Store, Morgan Amps, and Vaughn Scow. Pre-sale tickets. Go to the Nashville Community Group on Facebook and they'll have something for you there. And they also have videos of previous performers at this show on their YouTube channel. The other really cool thing is these guys have been kind enough to invite me to be the guest MC of the event, and I will certainly love to meet you if you listen to the show. Please come up, say hello. It's going to be a great night. Tons of cool guests, really good musicians. So come on down. Show starts at 7 at the Analog Room at the Nashville Hutton Hotel. All right, I will see you Tuesday night, October 1st. Be there. Aloha. If you want to buy or sell a home or investment property and you're here in the Tampa Bay area, in Hillsborough, Pinellas, or Pasco counties, then listen up. West Florida Real Estate is a local residential real estate broker that's helped over 250 Bay Area homeowners buy and sell their properties in the last 4 years alone. If you're looking to sell, you'll want to get their free report, the 7 biggest mistakes homeowners make when hiring a realtor. And if you're looking to buy a property, you definitely want to get your hands on the 21 most expensive mistakes Tampa home buyers make when buying a home. Each one of these reports is going to save you time and money. Inside, you'll discover the 7 most important things to consider when hiring a realtor, what to do if you're buying and selling a home at the same time, and the danger of choosing a realtor who agrees with everything you say. To get your hands on these free reports, head on over to westfloridarealestate.com. That's westfloridarealestate.com. Hey, this is Craig. If you like this show and you want to support it and you want to keep it free, head on over to everyonelovesguitar.com/support. That's everyonelovesguitar.com/support. Hey, everybody, this is Craig Garber. Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar. Man, I've got a great guest today, not just because he's a cool player and a good guy, but he's really got a great success story. I'm not going to say it's like the American dream because Billy Morris is living his dream, which is probably the best dream you got to live if you're going to pick someone's. That being said, I just want to make a quick announcement. Number one, thanks to Marco Peroni for hooking us up. And also, don't forget, you can now watch this on YouTube in addition to listening to it wherever you're listening to podcasts. All right, Billy Morris. 25 years ago, Billy was homeless and addicted to heroin. Since then, he's played with The Cult as their bass player, touring with them for a year. And since 2010, he's been a band member of Billy Idol's band as rhythm guitar player and background vocalist. He also co-writes with Billy and Steve Stevens. He's also written, recorded, and played with LA supergroups Camp Freddy and Royal Machines. He's written and recorded with his own projects, Stimulator, Doheny, and Circus Diablo. And he's released 2 solo albums and an EP. His latest LP is called God-Shaped Hole. We'll talk about that a little later. With Royal Machines, Billy shared the stage with some of the top names in music, including Ozzy Osbourne, Steven Tyler, Slash, Robbie Williams, Lou Reed, Ronnie Wood, Jerry Cantrell, and Dave Navarro. And then check this out. In 2012, Billy decided to start painting. So he picks up some canvas and paintbrushes, and today he's an incredibly successful contemporary artist whose works are owned by Shep Ferry, Sharon Osbourne, Craig Susser, Fred Durst, Sidney Holland, Mark McGrath, and other influential collectors and artists. Billy has a piece from his Butterfly series hanging in the U.S. Capitol in Washington, D.C. I bet you when you were walking around homeless, you never thought of that would happen, right?
Let me tell you why I know I live in the right country, right? When I lived in England, I never went to Buckingham Palace, and they certainly didn't hang any of my paintings in there.
That's right.
Since I've lived here, I've had a VIP tour of the White House, and I've got a painting hanging in the Capitol. So I think I know I'm in the right country.
Right on. Doing the right thing, that's for sure. Billy also has a signature Gibson Les Paul, which came out in 2011. And along with Dave Navarro, he puts on an annual benefit concert. This is really cool for Music Cares called Above Ground. I've talked about Music Cares on this show before. They're a great organization, typically supporting artists in recovery and a lot of other medical things. This concert Above Ground takes place this year after this interview airs. It's on September 16th. But Billy and Dave, what they do is they invite loads of guest musicians to come out and play 2 albums cover to cover. This year, they're going to perform David Bowie's Ziggy Stardust album and the Stooges' first album. What a great record. And as if Billy's not busy enough, he's also acted on television and written and performed television scores. Dude, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. And yeah, big up to Marco. Marco's a hero of mine, actually. I mean, I was going to see the Ants play before the White Stripe and before any hits. Before all that happened, they were an amazing punk band. Like, Adam used to come on shirtless in plastic pants and, you know, they're a real like, sex-driven punk band. And so I've been an Ants fan from the word go. When Kings of the Wild Frontier came out, I went to about 7 of those shows on that tour. Loved Marco's. Marco was like one of those innovative players that used feedback and used noise, and it was a very visceral tone that he had. So last year when we did the first Above Ground, I've never met him, but I got hold of him because, you know, in this business you can get hold of most people, and we ended up having, he went to the Starbucks in his town to get some Wi-Fi, and we ended up having this FaceTime conversation, and I invited him to come over. I said, look, we're going to play Kings in its entirety. And that dude, on his own dime, because it's charity, he flew over here, stayed here. I bonded a lot with him. I mean, we know most of the same people from that era. And for the first time in decades, he got up on stage with us and he played some songs from Kings of the Wild Frontier, which was an amazing experience. And it's nice when you meet some of your heroes. They're not all arseholes.
Yeah,
some
yeah,
are,
yeah.
Some are.
Right.
But Marco is a diamond geezer, and he was the one that he sent me an email. He went, "You should do this geezer's podcast." He's all it's all right for Marco. It's all right for me.
Yeah, man. Well, big ups to Marco. Yeah, he was really he had a good time at that event because he told me about it. He really enjoyed doing that, man.
Oh, man, it was so great. I think you know you got to imagine the guy was at the top of the game.
Yeah,
and then he not retired, but he just you know took it easy for a bit. And to have some random guy call you up and go, "We're playing your album. Do you want to come?" He did good, man. He, you know, he flew over on his own dime, and he was a team player, and he was really funny as well. You know, me and Dave had picked that album apart note for note. And we got in rehearsal, Marco played a different chord, and we're like, "Yeah, but on the record." And he went, "I fucking wrote it. I can do what I want." We're like, "You know what? You're absolutely right. We'll do that instead."
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I didn't, you know, he had a hand in all those popular songs, man.
Marco is an amazing songwriter.
Yeah, really bright guy.
He also did a song, no one's heard of this. It's called Wheeling the Roses, and the band was called Rema, R-E-M-A. It was a 12-inch single back in the day. I don't even have it. So you being you, if you find an MP3 of that, please send it to me.
Yeah, I will.
It is the most noise-driven, amazing, like industrial before industrial happened. Fantastic. And he was involved in that. And I had that 12-inch, but it doesn't exist as an MP3. So someone please find me on Instagram and send me that song.
There you go. The mandate's been issued. And you can find Billy on Instagram at Billy Morrison Official. All right, let's get started. I read something you said, and I vibe with this.
Terrible way to start.
Maybe. You may be right. You said, ultimately, I don't worry about the end results in life, and I believe you have to stick your neck out to achieve success. And I really like that because I vibe with that. And I'd like you to tie that into the fact that you've never taken a guitar lesson, an acting lesson, or a painting class. Because in my opinion, I believe that quote is more of the key to becoming successful in any endeavor than any potential talent that somebody might have, whether it's playing guitar, painting, acting, whatever. But I'd like you to talk about that because I think that's really right where it's at.
We just lost internet connection, but I did hear the quote and I heard you say that quote is more of, and then it was cut out. What did you say?
Oh, I said, okay. To me, that quote has more to do with people becoming successful, whether it's as a painter, an artist, a guitar player, than any, quote, talent that you may have.
Absolutely. I come from punk rock. That is a punk rock quote. And the whole punk was not a haircut. It was an attitude and an ethos. And the whole point of punk was you do not have to be trained to say something important. What you have to have is something important to say.
Oh, dude, that's awesome.
I have lived my life. Look, I'm an ex-junkie, homeless, and I live in Beverly Hills, and I have a great career in three different artistic endeavors. That's not because I'm hugely talented. I have some talent. Everyone has some talent. What's important is that you have the balls to put that talent out there. There are tens of thousands of guitar players way better than I am right now, probably one next door, sitting there in their bedroom, shredding and playing the Mixolydian, fucking all this shit. But what they don't have is the other side of the coin. The other side of the coin is step out and play it. The other side of the coin in art, there are fine art painters who went to college and university and studied the masters, and they have technique beyond. But they don't ever hang a painting up and ask to get judged. That's the trick, is inviting 500 of your closest friends, come and judge me. That's what an art show is.
Yeah.
Same as standing on the stage with a guitar. So, you know, there's two things that go hand in hand, and that quote is basically, I truly believe, I'm pretty much proof that it's, if you have the balls to just step out and do whatever it is you do, and you believe in what you do, and you have something important to say, success is there for you.
Yeah.
You know? I've never been trained in anything, and I'm doing all right so far.
Let me ask you this. How much of success do you also think may or may not be tied into being in the right place, like where the universe is supposed to, where you're supposed to be, if that means anything?
It does. Of course it does. Look, and that's a geographical thing as well. When I moved to America, I didn't have a job. I didn't have everything set up. It wasn't all boom, 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 boom. I came here, God's honest truth, I came here because I thought I would rather work in a 7-Eleven with sunshine and palm trees than work in a 7-Eleven next door to Brixton Tube Station.
That's so funny.
That was what, there was nothing lined up. And I think that the universe, for me, my universe takes care of me if I put the right footsteps together, right? So, no, I can't force a band to hire me, but I can be in the right place.
Yeah.
And I can have the balls to go, you know what, I'm going to sell everything. I'm going to go to America. I'm going to make it work, which is what I did. And it's the same with every creative endeavor. When I started acting, look, I love acting, and the only reason I haven't done more of it is because it's a medium where you have to take it 24/7, and I don't have time. I would love to do more roles. I really enjoy it. It's a very personal creative journey, much like painting, as opposed to music, which is a team effort. All I can do is be in the right town, which is obviously Hollywood. And I can go down a road without forcing it. So that's the universe. If there is something that I'm meant to be in, that will come to me.
Right.
It's not going to come to me if I'm selling t-shirts in Camden Market, but it may come to me if I'm living in Beverly Hills or Hollywood and I'm getting interviewed and I go, I would like to do more movies. Who knows who sees this? Someone goes, oh my God, he'd be great in my English gangster vampire movie. So you've got to put the footwork out there, but leave the results up to the universe. That's what I think.
Man, I agree with you, and it's only as in the last few years, honestly, that I've sort of come to realize that. When you were using, let me ask a different question. When did you start coming to that realization, and where was your mind on that back when you were using?
Well, when I was using, my mind wasn't on that at all. You've got to understand the way I used is not – when I say I was homeless, I wasn't, staying on people's couches. I was homeless on the street. Yeah. And when I used, I've never used the term partying because my using wasn't a party. I was a bad man, to be honest with you. And my using was dark, isolated, disgusting – and violent a lot of the time. It's another world. So I wasn't out there with a guitar going, hopefully one day I'll be a rock. I was like, where is the next 20 bucks coming from?
Yeah, right.
What do I need to do to get it? And that was for 14 years. So there was no thought. That realization started coming to me when I was about 3 years sober. Obviously, you clean up, you start having dreams and desires and, well, you know, maybe I could do this, maybe I could do that. But formulating a view of the universe and how the world works, for me at least, That didn't happen until I was 2 or 3 years clean and I was starting to get some kind of spiritual awareness and some kind of health back. I mean, my body was done when I cleaned up.
Yeah.
Done. So you need to get your health back. Your mind, body, and spirit come, but takes time. That way, about 3 years in, I found myself starting to want to know how it works for me in my world, how my universe works. So that's when that formulation started. And then I started meditating quite a few years in. That helped. I got on a fitness kick, and I don't know. There's many strands to that formulation of how the world works, and it's not in stone. I mean, I learn every day.
Oh God, yeah. If you're comfortable answering this, if you're not, that's totally cool. Was that like the first time you tried to get clean? And what do you think?
I did about 24 rehabs. I can't remember. I lost count. I started using drugs when I was 14. By the time I was 19, I realized it was a huge problem because I was rattling around squats in London begging for a pound.
Sure.
Yeah. So I knew it was a problem.
Yeah.
And back then, England had a healthcare system that would put you in a rehab. So I started using that just to get the police or my parents or whoever off my back.
Yeah.
And so I had tried many, many times to clean up.
What do you think made it work when you got, 'cause you've been sober a long time now.
I've been clean for 24 years now, yeah.
And congratulations for that.
You know, what makes it work is it's a very spiritual thing, and not everyone's going to subscribe to this viewpoint, but it's my viewpoint and it's my life. So I can tell you what happened for me is I was granted a moment, and I'm talking about a few seconds, of reality. And right in the middle of, I mean, I won't get too graphic, but it was a bad summer's day in London, and I was covered in blood. And I had this few seconds of realization where my fantasy of my funeral was black horses with plumes slowly going down Oxford Street with tens of thousands of people lying in the streets, all like this, you know, Billy Morrison has passed on to the, and I had a vision that the reality was, did you hear about that guy, Billy Morrison? Remember him? Yeah, he's dead. No, don't surprise me. That's it. No horse, no plumage, nothing. I realized I was going to die, and I was all right with dying.
Sure.
Trust me, I was all right with dying, as long as it was in a grandiose, egotistical kind of way. And I realized the reality of my death was going to be no one gives a fuck.
Yeah.
And I reached out. I reached out for help, and I got the help I needed.
Good for you, man. Thank you, man. I appreciate you sharing that.
I've got nothing to hide these days.
Yeah.
Which is new for me because I always had a lot to hide. But these days I don't care.
Just so you know,
my story can help someone.
Yeah. I have had so many people share stories of getting sober. I have a YouTube playlist of all these now. It's our most popular. A guy just emailed me this morning. He said, hey, I'm really struggling with this, and I listened to so-and-so's interview. Thank you. So this is going to have an impact. So thank you, man. And something else you said that I read and I dug it. It said, I believe in communication and talking about the stuff that's troubling us, confuses us, and plagues us. I would imagine that has definitely helped, been an asset to you as far as your sobriety and doing all these, accomplishing all the things you're doing.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of the main reason why Dave Navarro and I started Above Ground as a charity, because even now, all these years later, there's still a stigma about saying I'm depressed. A lot of parents would still say, buck up. You know, join the army. We'll throw you in the army. That'll sort you out. You know,
yeah.
No, you're not depressed. You just need a hobby. So we are conditioned to not talk about certain things. Suicide, that's a word, oh my God, don't talk about that. Everyone gets uncomfortable. And yet, close personal friends of mine are dropping like flies because they feel the words depression and suicide are not allowed. So communication is everything.
Yeah.
If someone has a drug problem and they're hiding it, which is 90% of the people with drug problems, they're hiding it because of fear. Yeah. And guilt, right? Well, fear and guilt can be dealt with. You know, I've dealt with a lot of my fears and pretty much all of my guilt. You know, we go through a process when we get sober, and it starts with communication. It starts with someone articulating, I have a problem.
Yeah. Good stuff, man. I agree with you. How did you initially wind up getting connected with the cult?
Oh my God, I'd known Billy Duffy. Billy Duffy knew me back in my using days.
Oh, wow.
He will now tell a story of stepping over my, what he thought was dead body in a squat in Brixton.
Wow.
He used to live in Brixton and I used to squat. He was living, he didn't use it, but he was, this squat was a long setup. So the room that he was in was right down one end. And the front door was right down the other end. And you had to walk through another bedroom and a living room to get to the front door. And Duffy, I mean, I've known him my whole adult life. He would step over me, lying there, like out, just he thought I was dead, you know, to get out of the front door. So we've known each other forever. And when the cult made a big comeback, it was 2000. I was in him for over a year, whatever. And he made a call to me. He said, I've heard you're moving to America. And I said, well, yeah, I am. He said, well, why don't you come and play bass and we'll see if it works out. And, you know, half of me was like, bass? Fuck no, you know. But at the time, it was a good move for me.
The cult has
always been one of my favorite bands. Even back in the day when I was using, I couldn't walk mainly, but I saw them, you know, they were that important to me that I'd drag my heroin riddled ass down the street to Brixton Academy. And I went to see the cult and they were amazing. So I was honored he asked. I was honored that Asprey said yes. Because Duffy brought me in and I went to rehearsal and I played and they were like, listen, if you want to do this, you can. And so I did my time in the cult. The cult has always been and will always be Ian Asprey and Billy Duffy.
Definitely.
I'm almost hesitant to say I was in them. I was in them. But if you look at their Wikipedia, it's Ian Asprey, Billy Duffy and 28 other people.
Yeah.
I'm just one of those.
Sure.
But I am forever grateful for the chance to play that music, tour the world with them. And, you know, they're still, I went to see them play the Hollywood Bowl the other day. Still one of the greatest rock bands in the world.
Definitely, man. I bought Southern Death Cult albums. Dude,
that's how I started to make up. Because I was in a band with other members of Southern Death Cult way back in the day. When Southern Death Cult broke up and became Death Cult, I joined the other members in another band.
Okay.
So the whole incestuous thing, but yeah, Southern Death Cult were amazing.
Yeah. Good times, man. How did you wind up working with Billy Idol now? A lot of Billies, man. Billy Idol, Billy Morrison, Billy Duffy.
Trust me, when you get Billy Gibbons in the equation and we're all playing the same gig in the Royal Machines gig, it's bizarre.
How did you wind up hooking up with Billy Idol and any cool or interesting stories with your that you could share from your experiences over the last almost 10 years?
Steve Stevens, I'd known for a long time. You know, I've been in LA for an awful long time. And Steve had guested with us as Camp Freddy. And Steve is a mentor, if you like. He's probably one of the greatest guitar players I've ever played with. Now, if you look at who I've played with, that's a big ass list.
Yeah, it is, man.
Steve Stevens, and I've been in a band with him now 2009, 19, well, 10 years. puts my jaw on the floor every single time. Even now, I just got back from a couple of shows, and stuff he does it without knowing he's doing it. That's the genius of Steve. Nothing's ever the same twice. It's just, I'm like, how do you pull that out without practicing it, rehearsing it? So Steve, we'd worked together, and he was a friend, and he called me up and he went, you know, I'm going to put you up. Would you like to play rhythm guitar in Billy Idol's band? I'm like, well, yeah, you've got the wrong guy, I'm sure. Don't forget this. Back in the day, I used to skip school and we call it bunking trains, basically not paying a ticket, hiding on a train, go up to the centre of London to see Generation X, one of my all-time favourite punk bands. So, and I'm from Bromley, which is where Billy's from, and I'm like trying to compute it all in my head that, you know, all these years later, I'm now going to play guitar for this guy. And then the management called and went, right, so what's the deal? You're in. Okay. And now I've been in there 10 years.
That's awesome.
It's perfect band for me. I respect Billy and Steve. Steve is the lead guitar player. And one of my skills is to know how to be a rhythm player. Not everyone knows that.
Yeah.
Everyone's looking for the glory. Mm. And my job as a rhythm guitar player is to provide a bedrock for the guy. So that's why I get on with Dave so well. Dave's the lead player.
Right.
And I think Steve would tell you that I provide a good bedrock chunk. I've always been the Malcolm Young over the Angus Young.
Hey, but that being said, I want to talk about your solo record because you play some pretty good riffs on there, man. Really Thank good you. Riffs. Last solo record, God-Shaped Hole. Kind of a dark record musically, but at the same time, I thought it was musically optimistic, which I tend to gravitate exactly to that. I just want to talk about a few of the songs on the record that I really like. And I mentioned to you earlier before we started, Housewife, I didn't know that was a cover, but your voice is great. And it was like, I was like, wow.
20 cigarettes a day.
That's the secret, man. Man, I so- just...
That album started. Me and Eric Eldenius, the drummer of Billy Idol, we get on well musically, personally, and we were on the road. That album was recorded in an 11-day break in a big tour.
Oh, wow.
And the way it started is we were on the road, and me and Eric are bored in a hotel talking, and we're like, you know what we should do? We should pick four covers from my past. Covers that no one knows, never heard, but take four amazing songs that I always thought would be great, re-recorded in the modern big sound. And we were going to put out an EP. And we started planning, okay, so when we've got a 10-day break, so we'll da-da-da-da-da. So we came back off one leg from Europe, and we had like 10 days or something, and we recorded those four covers, and it went so quickly and so well that I said, well, why don't we write the rest of an album? And we did. So we wrote it on the road, a lot of it. And then when we came back, we recorded it in a break. I think that was a 10-day break, and then mastered it at the end of the tour with Mike Klink, who did Appetite for Destruction.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Yeah.
He produced it. What we did is recorded everything, then gave Mike everything to mix, and then Dave Donnelly, who's also an amazing master and engineer, mastered the record, and that's how that record came. It wasn't even meant to be an album. So all the songs that I actually wrote, I mean, we were writing a song a day.
That's pretty cool, man.
Yeah, it came out good. Housewife was a song. God, 1986.
Who band. Did that, man? What a great song,
band,
man.
A band called Wasted Youth, but yes. Not the Wasted Youth that you had in America.
Okay.
There was another band called Wasted Youth in England. Never did anything. All heroin addicts. But I used to go and see them play, and they were like watching the Velvet Underground. They were so dangerous, stoned, volatile. And it's a song you can get that's on iTunes or Amazon.
Yeah, it's on that's where I got it from Apple. It's great.
Yeah, so I covered that, and it's a good one.
Man, you did great. And you're playing slide in there too.
I did, yeah.
That sounded great, man. What were you, what guitar were you playing on
that? Oh, God. That, I mean, you know what? I think that was a Steve Vai Ibanez because I had it set up with a high action. But, I mean, look, here's the thing. I'm a rhythm guitar player, but that doesn't mean I can't play lead or slide or, you know, I can. I just choose. Look, I grew up with Steve Jones and the Sex Pistols. That's the sound that changed my life. And there is no lead on that record that isn't Chuck Berry.
Yeah.
So if pushed, I will throw out a lead or a slide or if necessary. But quite frankly, I just want to play big power chords.
That sound, I love that song. I listen to that over and really dark lyrics in there, man.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was, I did, the covers were chosen because they were the probably the most seminal songs for me as a kid. And that song, you know, it, dark as shit, man.
Yeah, very. another one, talk about dark, Methadonia.
That's not a cover. I wrote that.
It was great. You had a very cool, it's like an industrial vibe running through the verses in there. And I picked up my guitar. I was playing it. It was like, is that in D minor by any chance?
Fuck, I don't know.
You know? That was great.
It's whatever the first guitar was in when I picked it up to write.
Talk about punk ethos, right? There you go.
I'm sure it's probably D minor thinking about it. Yeah.
It was great. Talk about
the lyrics for that. The lyrics are very important to me. They were written the day I recorded them. We had the song and I went into the studio to do vocals and Eric was with me and I'm like, dude, I have nothing. And he said, then we've got a studio, we're paying for it, you better write them. So I went outside, I had a coffee and a cigarette and I wrote them all in one go.
Serious?
I promise you. Yeah, there's a couple of songs like that actually.
Great song, man.
We literally didn't have the material and I needed it because we were rushing. So I sat down and, you know, if I get in the right headspace, I'm pretty good at lyrics.
Oh, that's a great song. Great song, man. Really good. And then, of course, the final song, Gods, features Ozzy on vocals and you and Ozzy co-wrote that song together, correct?
Yeah. So, you know, me and Ozzy were best friends. Everyone knows that. We text every day.
And, I love this.
I disappeared for about 4 days and he texted me and went, where are you? I said, listen, I've decided to do a solo album, so I'm going to be on the missing list for a little while. And the next text that came back is, well, I want to be on your solo album. And at the start, I didn't take that seriously because obviously Sharon's his manager and sometimes Ozzy wants to do stuff, but Sharon explains to him it's not the right thing to do. So I was just like, I laughed and I went, anytime, mate.
Yeah.
Well, the next thing, Sharon calls me. I mean, this was all Sharon. I can't thank her enough. She calls me and she says, listen, Ozzy keeps banging on about doing a song on your solo album. I think it would be a great idea.
Holy shit.
I'm like, seriously? She went, yeah. I said, what about his record label? Leave it to me, she says. Right. This is Sharon Osbourne. Leave it to me. About a week later, she calls up. Yep, we're good. Off you go.
Man, that's awesome.
Yeah, she made it happen. And I have forever love for both of them, Ozzy and Sharon. Sharon was there when I got divorced. She was the house that I went to cry it out. You know, they really are very important people to me. And Sharon made that happen. And then when we wrote it, we were in a hotel. I can't remember where. Because I go out with Ozzy sometimes just to hang out. We were in a hotel and that song came out in about 14 minutes. Lyrics, music, everything. I had a guitar. I'm strumming along. Ozzy's humming along and he hums like a few words. I'm like, what was that? What was that? So I write it down. We gradually formulate it. And about 15 minutes later, he just goes, I found myself another God-shaped hole. And I went, fucking hell. That's the title of the song, the album, the video, the whole nine yards.
What does that mean? Because I saw something about it. It was interesting.
A God-shaped hole is basically when you're – there is a school of thought that I subscribe to, which is drugs, alcohol, gambling, sex, power, money, property, prestige, all of that stuff that we can get addicted to. we are trying to fill a hole inside us that can't be filled by any of that, because the hole is God-shaped or spiritually shaped, right? And so we're trying to fill a God-shaped hole with a bunch of crack or gambling everything away. But it ain't going to work, because the hole isn't gambling shaped or pussy shaped. It's God shaped.
Dude, that was very cool. Thank you.
It's just, it's how I see things. And that's, I then did the cover. I painted a picture of a heart.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. It's awesome.
Yeah. And so the whole concept for the album then came out of doing that song with Ozzy. And let me tell you, when we recorded it, I did all the music, and Steve Stevens plays the end solo.
I was going to ask you about that. Was killer,
yeah.
Man.
Oh yeah, it's amazing.
Fucking so amazing, yeah. And it was long. It was a long solo.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's awesome. And so we had the music, and Eric had played drums on it. We went into the studio with Mike Klink, and we recorded Ozzy in the studio we were mixing at, just because that's how it worked out. So Ozzy's scheduled to come over, and I think I'd done a rough vocal on the track and sent it to Ozzy and went, this is what it is, how it's going to be. And Mike's like, how is Ozzy in the studio? Is he going to, are we going to be here all day? And I smiled and I went, just wait. So Ozzy shows up. He was there less than half an hour.
Cut the track. Like,
hello. All right. How you doing? He's like, all right, let's do it. So he goes in, the green light goes on, immaculate, one take. Mike Klink is looking at me like, all the hairs are standing up.
Yeah.
We finish, and he goes, I think that was good. Let's do a double track. And he did a double track, exactly the same, and left.
Wow. Dude, you have his voice down like pretty damn good. I got to tell you. Oh, man. Besides Ozzy and Steve, any other guests on the record?
Yeah. Well, who did? Navarro did a couple of bits in Methadonia. Not the solo, that's me, but there's some ethereal guitar, like jangly bell stuff that Dave played. I think that was it.
It's a great record, man. I was really happy to listen to it.
When I make a solo album, I pride myself on making it a solo album. I play all the program. I'm a big programming you can see behind me. That's my rig. And I write the drum parts as well.
Oh, you do? Wow.
Yeah, I don't play them because you don't want to hear me play drums. I get someone else to do that. But I write the drum parts, all the fills and the beats and everything, and play all the instruments. Oh, hang on. The piano on God-Shaped Hole was also played by my Billy Idol bandmate, Paul Trudeau.
Very cool.
Because it became an Aussie track, I play all the keyboards on all the other songs, but it became an Aussie song, so I'm like, I need a real guy. Not me.
Your work ethic is really, to me, I believe you can tell a lot about a person from their work ethic. I think that gives you a lot of insight into how they do everything. And, usually people that have good work ethics are honest, upfront, the kind of characteristics that I like in a person. Where does your work ethic come from, and what's the emotional payoff for you in getting so much done?
That's one of the best questions I've ever been asked. The work ethic comes from not even waking up from a narcotic haze till I was 29. Right.
So you got time to make up.
So all my peers had platinum records when they were 19, got the money when they were 20, had the heroin habit till they were 26, cleaned up, and off they go again. I couldn't even do it right.
You didn't do your heroin habit right, Billy. You fucked it up.
So when you wake up on this planet at 29, I mean, I wasn't even formed as a human being when I started shooting dope.
Yeah.
So when you wake up as a human being on this planet and you're like fucking, looking at 30, you got two choices. You either go into corporate land and go back to school and get in an office and try and make some money, Because at 30, now you've got to start thinking, well, you know, I've got no brothers and sisters, and now my parents are dead. So it's just me.
Yeah.
So I woke up and went, fuck, this is a problem. So my work ethic stems from not wanting to, I want to be a fully self-supporting member of society. I want to pay my own bills. I don't want to borrow. I don't want to owe money. And I like nice things. If you want all that, you got to earn money.
Yeah.
So you better have a big work ethic, you know? So that's where the work ethic came from, is a realization that I needed to have one, because I've never had one before. And I enjoy it now. I enjoy working because I see the fruits of my labors.
Sure.
The emotional payoff is, well, I'm still single. I'm set in my ways. I have a great life. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I fly around on private planes and I've got a wonderful house in Beverly Hills, and that's not bad for a junkie from Brixton.
Oh, right? No, man. It's not bad for anybody.
There is an emotional payoff, and the emotional payoff is I'm a workaholic.
Yeah. I totally get that, man.
You know?
No, I actually understand. I identify with that too, because I sort of didn't really wake up till I was like 29 or 30, and I felt like, fuck, I got a lot of time. I got to make up for lost time here.
That's right.
So I really do understand that, man.
You know, one day, a gorgeous woman will walk into my life and I will go, you're the one that I've been waiting for.
There you go.
But until that happens, I'm going to paint another painting and write another album. Simple.
There you go. You're more involved, or you seem to be a lot more involved with the business aspects of what you do, more so than a lot of musicians tend to be. I was curious, and you might have just answered that question. What drove you to be so business oriented, and how did you go about learning the business stuff you needed to know?
It is tied into the previous question. I mean, when you get a work ethic, and you know, I'm not Slash and I'm not, you know, Ronnie Wood or whatever. I don't have a big machine behind me.
Yeah.
So you better learn, and you better learn quick. I obviously have a natural aptitude for the business side. I mean, I understand shit. The moment I hear it, I understand things. You have no idea how much of the business side I know. I just did a – this is airing after the show. But I just did a walkthrough of the venue of the Above Ground gig, where I'm listening to – how much per hour the riggers are to put the 20 by 30 video wall in that's coming from PRG Lighting, and why that is a three-phase power, and that means we need a generator, and how much that's going to cost. Like, I know budgets and all of that stuff. Now, the reason I know it is because I do a lot of stuff without a team.
Right. So you're forced to know it.
Yeah, and actually, my manager would say, well, you don't have to do – I do have a team now. But coming up, I didn't have a team, and I still did good shit, and I created Camp Freddy, which was the start of that whole thing. And there was no team. Now I do have a team, but I'm so used to knowing all the information that my manager would say, yeah, he won't let go and allow his team to do shit. But, you know, I also would say, well, yeah, but it's scary to have an artist – that understands how it works, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. No, I think you're always better off knowing information than not knowing information.
Well, yeah, but a lot of people don't want their artists to know how it works. They just want them to show up, look pretty, and play the guitar. And I am the one looking around going, how much did that cost?
Yeah. Well, nothing against your manager or anybody else, but my reaction to that is, the guys that want people to just show up and play, that says more about them than, you know.
It does. And I'm being slightly facetious because my manager's awesome. I mean,
yeah.
Stuck with what he puts up with. First of all, my manager don't earn any money from me and Dave doing Above Ground. It's a charity.
Yeah.
And yet we're pulling out all the stops and causing him daily heartburn, you know, and he still is like, whatever you guys need. So, you know, that's not really directed at my guy.
Yeah, yeah.
More as me being control freak, I guess.
That's all right. You can say it. How did you get involved playing music in the first place?
Oh, it was, there was no question. I mean, I went to see Gary Glitter.
Gary Glitter, wow.
Yeah, well, when I was like seven, you know, my mum took me to see Gary Glitter. I guess it was just in the blood.
Yeah.
You know, I'd always loved music, and the Sex Pistols came out, and I saw them on TV, and I saw the reaction of the whole fucking world to that band, and I went, oh, you don't have to be brilliant. I could do this. That's why the Pistols changed my life.
Because
then I realized, oh, I can do this.
That's really cool, actually.
But it's obviously, I don't know, it's obviously in my DNA. I mean, there's never been any question that I would be in music.
Were any of your parents musical? Or?
No.
No. Billy, what are one or two things that you might have done which at the time were out of your comfort zone, but hindsight 2020 turned out to be big breaks for you?
Everything.
Dude, that is really fucking honest.
Everything I've ever done has been out of my comfort zone because I'm not trying, because I am fucking winging it. Listen, if you think for one moment, my second gig with the Cult was RFK Stadium in Washington.
Holy shit.
In front of 70,000 people, right? If you don't think for one moment that I walked onto that stage not in a comfort zone, you're mistaken. There was no comfort zone. And the rehearsals for the Cult, they had 2 weeks scheduled, and after 2 days, Billy says, yeah, we sound great, that's fine. So everything I've done, even now, I expect someone to tap me on my shoulder and go, we didn't mean you. We meant that younger, better-looking guy that's standing. Yeah. If you would just move out the way, sorry about that. Dude, I spend my life outside my comfort zone.
That is the most honest answer I think I've got in 600 interviews. That was so fucking cool and so raw, man. Thank you. That was really legit.
It's the truth.
So let me ask you this one. If you could go back and give younger Billy advice, assuming he would have listened.
Oh.
Which he wouldn't have.
Younger Billy wouldn't have listened. But assuming he'd have listened, yeah, the advice would be stick a needle in your arm.
Yeah.
That's the only, I mean, look, I don't regret it. It's made me it is what it is. It's made me the person I am today. And I definitely have an outlook on life that I would not have had I not lived through hell for 14 years. However, could have done without it.
Yeah. I hear you. Maybe there would have been a different way.
but also who knows? I'd have ended up, my dad was a motorcycle racer.
Right.
Maybe I've ended up on a motorcycle racing and died in an accident. I don't fucking
know. No, you can't. I know. You can't go backwards, man. It's just, and plus every time you look in the rearview mirror, you're not moving forward and you're just fucking stuck.
Right. So I think
agree with you, man.
The advice would be don't stick a needle in your arm, and it would be more because of the pain I caused other people than the pain I caused myself.
Sure, I get that.
If I hadn't have gone down that road, there would have been an awful lot of people who would have been spared the pain and heartache that they were given by me.
Yeah, I get that, man. Let's switch gears for just a few minutes. I want to talk about some guitars because I know you got a pretty good guitar collection. What's your main guitar, the one you go to, your go-to guitar now?
A go-to would always be a Les Paul. I mean, I have 100 guitars, Craig, so
yeah.
It's hard. You know, it would always be a Les Paul, right? And it does change.
Yeah.
Now, I have a 59 replica that was built for me by Steve Stevens. He built it. He sourced, it's real Gibson parts, and he sourced all the electronics and pickups as they were from 59. Like there's a guy in, I don't know, bumfuck nowhere.
Yeah.
Who's got the original winding machine, who's churning out these like hand wired, and Steve, he found all these parts and people. He said, listen, I'm going to build one for myself. Would you like me to build you one? Now, Steve, not only is he one of the best guitar players in the world, he knows, like inside and out, how to build and maintain guitars. So he built this thing for me, and I've got to tell you, it's in my Billy Idol rack right now, and I'm meant to change guitars for this song and that song. The moment I get that thing on, I look at my tech, I'm like, forget it, I'll just play this. It plays amazing.
That's so cool. What is it? It's a burst I'm assuming.
Oh, it's a gold top. Actually.
Oh, it's a gold top. Wow.
Yeah. But it's just, we, you know, it's not chambered.
So it weighs a ton.
You know, it actually, so the trick with the wood that they have, I learned this through building my own signature with them. There is wood available that doesn't weigh a ton.
Okay.
That isn't chambered, but that's the expensive shit.
Right.
You know, it depends upon the altitude that it came from, all this stuff that I really don't want to know about.
Yeah, yeah.
But there are pieces of wood that don't weigh like a mahogany coffee table that is one piece, non-chambered, and then the neck is it's my type of profile. I like a wider neck.
Mm.
And it's all era specific. And then he put all this electronics in and pickups that – it's just fantastic guitar.
That's so cool, man.
I love my signature. If I'm ever going to do one guitar at a gig, it'll be a Billy Morrison signature, obviously, because it's what I want a guitar to be. I was beyond blown away when they offered me a signature. I said, "You got the wrong guy." they said, "No, you know, just because you're not a Steve Vai shredder, you are an ambassador of the brand and we respect everything you do." So I got the signature and it took 2 years in design, mainly because of the headstock. It's actually, I don't know whether can you see that?
Yeah, I can.
Yeah. It's a white headstock, which took a long time.
Can you pick that up and show it? Cause I think people will dig it. Cause it is really cool with that white headstock. There you go. White headstock. That is so fucking cool looking, man.
Yeah, it's a copyright issue. And before that guitar, they'd never done a white headstock, ever. Mine was the first.
Oh.
And when I suggested it, they said no. They said, hold on. They said, no, it's a copyright thing. All our headstocks have to be black.
That's interesting. I wouldn't.
And it took a lot of persuasion to actually explain how cool it would be if we did a reverse white. Yeah. But they did it for me. And then the fret wire is really fat because I've got big hands. So it's 6600, I think, Dunlop gold fret wire. The neck profile is a hybrid, how I like it. Just everything about the guitar was designed how I like it.
That's right. Very cool, man. Man, do you ever sit back? And I know you do because you got all this gratitude. You must sit back and like say, fuck, you know, like that old expression, you know, success is measured by where you started and where you're at, you know, not how much you have necessarily. But you've done really, I mean, fucking.
Well, I would say
to you, man.
Thank you. I would say success is measured by how happy you are.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you can't be a miserable fucker and have all this shit. And then yeah.
That's right. And I know many of them.
Oh, yeah.
And I know a lot of people that have nothing and are just genuinely spiritually happy. So, you know, success is not measured. I think it's success is an internal job. It's an inside job.
Yeah, man.
So, but do I take stock? I take stock 5 times a day, 50 yeah. times.
Yeah.
I meditate twice a day. I do TM. So during meditation, I won't get into a meditation description, but you go in and out and nearly always I'm thinking, oh, my God, I can't believe my life. Every time I get on a plane, you know, especially when it's our plane, that's it. You know, I'll tell you, yes, and success is not measured by material goods at all.
No.
But I will tell you that the day I got my first Aston Martin – was the day I was going on the road and I pulled up at a private airport on the tarmac in front of our own private jet in my Aston Martin. And I did stand there and go, there's something not right about this.
Yeah, man.
You know, it's a good moment. And I also measure success by being able to I sat down in a hotel lounge the other day with an art client. He bought a painting from me 2 years ago. And he's talking about buying another one. And totally he just, I was in his city. I can't remember even what city it was. But he emailed me, he said, listen, I'd love to talk to you about getting another painting. Do you have time? And I said, come meet me for a coffee in the hotel. And unprompted, he sat down. He went, listen, before I start, I haven't had a drink for 3 years, and it's because of you.
Wow.
He said, well, I saw Billy Idol play the Wilton in LA, which I obviously was there. And he said, I didn't know who you were. And I saw this other guitar player. And I'm like, wow, he looks good. He plays good. So I researched you and read a bunch of interviews. And I loved your story. And you inspired me to stop drinking. Well, that's how I measure my success.
That's heavy, man. That's awesome. Yeah, yeah, to have an impact like that, that is really special. That's really cool, man. Yeah. First record you ever purchased?
Gary Glitter.
Was it Gary Glitter? Give me your...
I don't know what one, but it was definitely Gary Glitter.
Give me your top three Desert Island CDs.
Never Mind the Bollocks, without question.
Yeah, I knew that would come up with number one.
The Wild Hearts. Earth versus the Wild Hearts. And, yeah, I'm going to say Ziggy Stardust.
It's a great record.
Yeah. I could live my life with those three albums. That's it.
Billy, most important things that you have learned about yourself.
Oh, my God. Woo! See, I'll talk about heroin all day long. what was the question? Three most important
things? No, most important things you've learned about yourself, whatever you'd like.
That kindness gets you everywhere. You know, kindness over arrogance. And I'm a human being. I'm fallible. I can still succumb to arrogance if I'm not careful. And I hate that in me, and I hate it in other people. So kindness beats everything.
Yeah.
That also, I'll tell you a big one. Money isn't the answer.
For sure.
And that's very easy to say when you haven't. So I've obviously been around people with a lot of money, and coming up, they would all say, you know, money isn't the answer, you know. And I'm the same as everyone. You know, you will say, no, I know money's not the answer. But there's a space in the back of your head going, but I could do with some.
Of course.
When you haven't done it.
Yeah.
And I remember, look, I'm not hugely wealthy, but I bought my own house, and it's a dream house. And I was lucky enough to do it out with all this flash shit in it and artwork and all the rest of it. And I remember the day I did all that without living in it. I was touring and I bought this fucking house. And I'm like, my contractor guy said, look, just do this, do that. Here, keys to my assistant. Let him in. So I wasn't here. And I remember the day I actually came here. Everything was done. TVs on the wall, everything. And I sat down on my couch that night and went, fuck. Because it's not the answer. It's lovely. Very proud of myself and of everyone that worked on the house. But you sit down and you go, yeah, still got the hole. There's still a hole inside me. It's an inside job.
Yeah.
So that's probably the biggest single lesson I've learned is having nice flash shit is great. But it ain't going to make you feel better. It's really not. And I've learned that lesson, which is why I do a lot of charity work and I'm active in the sober community here in Los Angeles, and I meditate and I work out, because health, spiritual fitness, that's what makes that hole go away.
Yeah, for sure, man.
He said, lighting another cigarette.
Man, you know what? Some of the guys, you know Earl Slick?
Yeah.
I have Earl coming on this show soon, and he's the same, man. He's in great shape for his age. And I'm like, dude, what is the secret? He goes, smoking all these cigarettes.
Earl won't remember this, but he actually performed with my band, with me and Navarro in New York.
Oh, I bet you he will remember it, because I asked him about some guys that he played with back in the 70s and 80s today, and he remembered them.
So yeah, he did a couple of songs. We were going to ask him actually to do this this gig, but unfortunately, he's New York based.
Yeah.
And it's charity, so there's no flights. So yeah, you know, we didn't ask him, but you know, I love Earl Slick. He was him and Johnny Thunder's the image. It's like,
oh yeah,
that's the look.
That's, you know, that's the look, man. Best. Oh, this is a tough question. What do you like most about you?
Oh, it's a great question. It's not tough. I just got to think about it for a second. You know, I like my morals. A lot of, not everything, but a lot of what I do is based upon a moral compass that I believe in. It's not everyone's moral compass, you know, but I like my moral compass that I live by. I really love, as a guitar player, that I have a great understanding of what a rhythm player should do. I'm proud of that. Most twin guitar bands are perennially fighting. Yeah. I'll do the solo in this. No. Well, if you, like, I don't give a shit. What I want is tone. It's all about tone, because if you give the beautiful, thick, creamy, rich, powerful rhythm tone that all those lead guitar players want, they can go off with all of this shit, and I'm proud that I'm providing that bedrock. So that, you know.
That's cool, man. I mean,
I'm also proud of my sobriety. I mean, that ain't easy.
No, it's not easy, man, for a long time. And you're in a music industry.
Yeah, that's changed, though. Pretty much now in the music industry, if you're a fuck-up, you ain't going to get anywhere.
Yeah, but it's still conducive. You're working late nights. You're around the shit. You know, it's not like it used to be, but it's still.
Not really.
Really?
I mean, not really. I mean, no, that is a myth. I can't remember the last time I came into contact with any of it.
That's great.
Mainly it's girls. You know, you get these girls that are still in party mode and they're like, let's do a line. And I look at that and go, see you later, love.
Yeah. Oh, man. Who's had the biggest influence on you musically and also personally?
Oh, wow. Well, musically, obviously the Sex Pistols. The Sex Pistols have had the biggest musical influence on me, just because I defy anyone. Look, that band released 12 songs on one record.
I know.
Everything else is B-sides, bonuses, extra material, all the rest of it. The fact is, one album, 12 songs.
28 concerts. That's it.
Yeah, no, exactly. and yet, 40 years later, they're still talked about as the most seminal band in the world. No one, your Led Zeppelins, your Beatles, they all have multiple albums and careers to form and shape and work on their craft. The Pistols, it was less than 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, fight that if you can.
Yeah.
You know, it's a huge thing for me. Personally, I mean, musically, Steve Stevens and Dave Navarro, both of them shape me. I play with a lot of guitar players, most of whom I just enjoy their company and their playing. But Navarro and Stevens, I watch closely, I learn. Steve has pushed me. Steve says things like, he'll be playing this mad solo, and then he'll come over, he'll go, why don't you play that a third below? And I'm like, well, first of all, I can't. You know, but he says, no, Steve has said, no, yes, you can. Do this, do that. And he has shaped me musically as a player.
That's great.
Billy Duffy has shaped me as well at the time. The people that I've been in bands with shaped me. As a person, I haven't spent a lot of time with him, but Steve Vai. An extremely knowledgeable and beautiful person.
Yeah.
Navarro as well. Personally, I've learned a lot from him. And Sharon and Ozzy. Despite all they've been through, that family, you know, I'm obviously lucky enough to have them in my life on a personal level. And they have sensibilities that the rest of the world can only dream of, you know, the sense of family, the sense of loyalty. They are loyal beyond and have fought for me in many different areas that you wouldn't even expect. So I learn a lot from those people.
That's cool, man. It's really cool that Steve is so, Steve Stevens. I don't know that a lot of lead players would, have, because in the back of their mind, well, if I teach him this, and if he gets a little, you know, it shows a lot of, you know, his kindness and his confidence, and it's just like trust in your relationship, you know.
That's why I mentioned
really
it.
Cool.
You're right. I'm not going to name names, but there are a lot of lead players that don't want to pass anything down, don't want to encourage.
Yeah.
You know, that's why they're called lead.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And Steve is, there's not an ounce of that. When we wrote Kings and Queens of the Underground, the last Billy Idol album, it was an open book. I brought so much to the table, but only because Steve allowed me to.
Yeah, that's great, man. That's really cool.
Yeah, he's a good guy, man.
Most important thing your dad taught you?
Always wear a nice watch.
And you got one on, bro. I noticed that earlier. Oh, man. That's funny. I have a funny feeling like in your old life, you'd be like, you know, the movies, the British movies with Jason Statham, like, you know, what are they?
Dude, I love Jason Statham.
That guy's awesome, man.
And I'll tell you what.
Like Snatch, like you'd be one of those guys, you know, in your using days, you'd be one of those guys in the garage.
One of my fantasies, or one of my bucket lists, and maybe Jason will hear this, is to do a movie with Jason.
There you go.
And I'll tell you why, because Jason, look, he's no fucking Shakespearean actor, but Jason is the punk rock actor to my artist or my musician.
100%.
Jason's like, you know what, I'm going to be a fucking actor. And he does. And he's one of the biggest movie stars in the world, and he's just him.
Yep.
And I love that. And plus, I love his vibe. So one day, I am going to do a movie with Jason Statham.
So let's make it a double. I want to get Jason on the show and you want to do a movie. We're putting this out into the universe, man.
Yeah, there you go. That's it. You're manifesting.
That's it. We're going to see what happens. We'll roll with it. And if he comes to me, I'll hook you up. If he comes to you hook me up, man. That's what we're going to do here. You have any non-musical superpowers?
Oh, fuck. Yeah, I'm really good at cleaning a house.
I had someone tell me that once. They were good with dishes or something like that.
If you saw my place, you would say no one lives it.
That's awesome.
It's immaculate. No, I mean, you know, superpowers. I don't have any superpowers, but I'm pretty good at anything I turn my hand to.
I like that, man. Most important lesson your business has taught you.
Be kind and respectful to everyone on the way up because you're going to meet them on the way down.
Oh, yeah. Fuck yeah. Hey, and last question, Billy. And, man, thank you very much. You've been a real sweet guy. You're so direct, man. That's so awesome to me because that's like – I like that. I'm the same way. Biggest change in your personality over the last 10 years and how much of that has been intentional and how much is just a function of aging?
I think the biggest change is wanting to do more for other people, the planet, animals, not making it all about me so much. You know, I got to a point where my life is good and I can pay my bills. And so I think the biggest change comes where you realize, look, I'm not the biggest cat in the world. I've got whatever voice I have. And it's a small voice, but it's a voice. I need to use that for good. I need to use that to try and change in a very small way whatever I can. Homeless crisis, the suicide and depression stuff that Dave and I are working on. I'm a big animal advocate. I'm a scuba diver, and I love sharks, and we're losing them.
Yeah, you know, man, I can't believe that.
I think that's the biggest change is – up until 10 years ago, it was still, am I going to get through this life? You know, how am I going to eat today? Those were real problems for Billy Morrison. And then once you get over that hump and you're like, okay, I think I'm going to be all right. You then start looking around and going, well, I need to help others.
Cool, man. Listen, let me tell people where to find you. Do you want to talk a little bit about your art? Because let me just tell everybody, Billy is a really good painter, man. And his stuff is, if you like Shep Fairey type of modern stuff, his stuff is not like Shep Fairey's, but it's really on that sort of that contemporary. And you could find it at billymorrisonart.com and also on his Instagram at billymorrisonofficial. But do you want to talk about that a little bit? Because, I mean, you put a lot of effort into that.
Not really, other than if you like art and you want to buy a painting, contact me. I mean, yeah, check out my art. It's very easy to find. I've done a bunch of art shows, and I am what I am. I paint what I paint. I'm very contemporary modern. I love Warhol, Basquiat, Herring, Lichtenstein, Shepard, all of that. And just don't ask me to do something for free.
Do people ask you to do stuff for free?
Listen, people, my work is around the 10 grand mark.
Right. Okay?
Worked hard to get it there.
Of course.
It's adequately priced, right? And I get people contacting me, how much for this piece? And I give them a price. And they're like, dude, I thought it'd be like $300. That's the only thing. The only thing that drives me crazy with art is the pricing, because people think that it's a poster, and it's not. It's fine art, and it costs a lot of time and money and talent
and expertise. Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, I could take this laptop into the art studio and show you art stuff that has been there for 3 months that I'm still working
with. Yeah.
You know, and when that goes up, there's a reason for it being that price.
Good for you, man. Other than that,
feel free to contact me. Get your checkbook out. We'll do a deal.
There you go. That's right, man. It always blows my mind when people, like, do you work for free? I mean, like,
yeah, exactly.
Billy Morrison Art. Get out your checkbooks and contact Billy. Instagram, Billy Morrison Official, for art merchandise. Check out God Shaped Hole, man. It's a great record. And there's some really good stuff on there. Billy, I thank you very much. I'm going to wrap up. Hang on and we'll chat. Thank you for your time, and it's been real interesting. Thanks for being so real. I appreciate that.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. My pleasure. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this, please share on your social media channels. We appreciate your support. Please check out Billy Morrison on tour with Billy Idol, and check out his artwork at Billy Morrison Art and Billy Morrison Official on Instagram, and listen to all his records, but his latest one, God Shaped Hole, great record. Make sure you go to everyonelovesguitar.com, sign up to get on our newsletter list so you and I can connect. And most important, are you going to dig this, man? Most important, remember that happiness is a choice, so choose wisely. Be nice, go play your guitar, and have fun. Till next time, peace and love, everybody. I'm out. Billy, thank you for everything, brother.
Thank you.
Hey, was that okay? We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.